And we're talking with John Hogue about Prophecy, the Last Pope. And we'll be back with John in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Hogue with us. John, we were talking about the prophecy clock and when things kick into gear. So let's assume a pope is named, his name is John. What happens?
Well, if his name is John, or Michael, there's never been a Michael.
Anything but Peter.
Yeah, it can't be Peter, but he could have been born with the name Peter. He could have been of an order that deals with the mission of St. Peter. He could have a fishing boat in his coat of arms because of the bark of the church. This is the same fishing bark that Peter used, which was his symbol because he was a fisherman in his day job before Jesus called him off to be an apostle. But we were discussing at the end of the last hour the unique different take that the Catholic Church in its official approved prophecies has towards the apocalypse. It's different from the Protestants, and it has four phases. And so whoever that pope is, we seem to be in the times of the spiritual crisis, the tribulation, the crisis in faith that is going to hit the very top of the church, where a lot of people are feeling disconnected from the pope. In fact, this sex scandal has, over the years, done some surprising things to areas that were stalwart areas of Catholic support, like in Ireland and in other places that I never would have dreamed would have happened. But this is definitely prophetically heading us into what is called the period of the warning. And then what happens is the next period is called the miracle. And that's when there's visitations and mass healings caused by apparitions of the Virgin Mary appearing all over the earth. And it'll be a rash of divine stigmata, that's people bleeding out of their hands and bleeding out of their foreheads, and because they're replicating the empathy of the suffering of Christ on the cross with his thorny crown, as he was ridiculed as King of the Jews, and they put the thorny crown on his head. What will then happen is that there will be also miraculous signs in the heavens. So that clocks us into some of the interesting things that have been going on with meteors of late, like what hit the Ural Mountain region of Russia, what hit Florida just recently, the fireball over San Francisco, the fact that we are in a year that is going to see three cometary events, one that's already happening, the Southern Hemisphere comet Lemon, another comet supposed to be seen in the Southern Hemisphere in March, and then I very much anticipate what in the world the comet Ison will be like, which will streak across the Northern Hemisphere, where most of the world's population is, and certainly where many of the main centers of the Holy Roman Church are. And it'll be interesting to see if any of this has anything to do with the miracle, as it's called, whether that what it has to do is projected on something that's completely scientifically explainable or not. Just like the fact that it is sometimes a coincidence that if you burn the burrito a certain way, it might look like the Virgin Mary's face is in it. Or the thing that I learned from an Iranian cabbie when I was going home from actually touring with my book, The Last Pope, in London. He told me the amazing story how somebody one day in Iran thought they saw Ayatollah Khomeini, the first Grand Ayatollah of the Iranian Revolution, in the full moon. And he said everybody in Iran had to get up on their roofs on the full moon night.
To go see him.
To go see it. And of course, if you go in the moon right now, on the lower left side of the full moon, it will look like a side shot of the Ayatollah Khomeini with his beard and his black turban, which is one of the lunar oceans of dust. And again, you know, it's like people were seeing demons in the smoke rising out of the two towers. And I was on a show where they're showing and everybody's going, yes, I see it. And I saw something that looked a lot like Donald Duck. And I said, well, actually, I'm seeing Donald Duck coming out of it right now.
Oh, well, people see what they want to see, John.
Yeah. So whether it's a miracle, which I'm not denying it might not be, but or whether it's something that is attributed to be such, that's the second stage. The third stage is more objective, where there's no doubt that something's going down according to the Catholic version of the four steps of the apocalypse. It's called the chastisement. And it's when God sends two final prophets, Elias and Enoch, and they are martyred by the Antichrist. And it said then that the Virgin Mary can no longer stay the angry hand of her son, Jesus Christ, and then you basically have the full-on Book of Revelations apocalypse with Armageddon and all of that. And during that time, the church and the faithful are sorely tested by the Antichrist, disasters, and Armageddon. Now, if you look at St. Hildegard of Bingen and others who have variations on these themes from other medieval prophets, what's commonly described and anticipated is the destruction of Rome, and that the church has a failure of faith at its very highest leadership. There are even some less approved Catholic prophets who even indicate that the Antichrist will be a false pope. Whether that's true or not, it depends on what actually happens and how people predict it. It's certainly, according to the approved seers of the Catholic Church, they do not look at it this way. And in fact, one of the reasons why the Third Secret of Fatima may have been fraudulently changed by Cardinal Bertone and Cardinal Ratzinger, before one became Pope Benedict and perhaps the other becomes Petrus Romanus, is it was finally released. Sister Lucia was one of the surviving three children who in 1917 saw the vision of the Virgin Mary.
And she just died, too, a couple years ago.
She just did. And she made this prophecy and wrote it down in her own handwriting on one piece of paper. Over the years, people even got her to say what the first sentence said, because it had nothing significant to say in the prophecy, but she opened with what she said in the first sentence. It was supposed to be released. The first prophecy was about how Russia had to be consecrated to the Sacred Heart of the Virgin Mary, or would fall into atheism. Well, that happened. Within the following year, it was a Bolshevik communist system. And that if it wasn't consecrated to the Virgin, Russia would be involved in another major world war, which would be seen the second vision of Fatima, which is great portents in the sky. And it is interesting to note that on the week that Adolf Hitler was secretly solidifying his non-aggression pact with Joseph Stalin, which shocked the world because he was such an anti-communist, but he was doing it to guard his back so that he could start World War II. And on one of the nights of these amazing auroras that stretched across the sky and made the whole sky red as blood, and he was in the Birch's Garden looking at it, and the people had come out after dinner and are saying, oh, how awful, it looks like the sky is bleeding, it looks, what a terrible portent. And the stories that I've heard is that Hitler looked up at it, started pounding his fist into his open hand a few times, and he said, so be it. And he turned around and went back into the Birch's Garden. And it was a few days later that the non-aggression pact was signed, which allowed World War II and the death of 60 million people to happen. That's the second prophecy of Fatima, is probably about that. The third was secreted away into a letter, that single page.
And we still really don't know what it is, do we?
Well, here's the thing. Sister Lucia did make a very, very important point, that it had to be released. Popes have opened the letter and looked at it. Every pope since this happened has taken a peek and looked at it. What has usually happened is they seal it back again. There's been some stories, maybe some apocryphal, that some of the popes almost fainted when they saw it, that it was very horrific. She had said it had to be released no later than 1960. Now, that indicates to me that the message is that it was supposed to be fulfilled shortly after that. Now, there have been some debates. That when John XXIII looked at it, when he became Pope after Pius XII, that He put it back, but he did a lot of things in the behind the scenes. I mean, we always hear about Khrushchev and Kennedy going back and forth to stop the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was the closest time that we know of where United States and Soviet Union almost went to a thermonuclear war.
That's right.
And there, what's lesser known is that the Pope knew Khrushchev's brother and had been also working through the power of the Vatican to help stop the war. And there's been some theorizing that he actually read the prophecy, and with some of his statements about how prophecies can be changed in his own encyclicals, he probably moved to not make it happen, that he believed that the prophecy was about the Cuban Missile Crisis turning into Armageddon.
Well, that's intriguing, because it's possible then that with free will, he may have altered the fate of this planet.
Yes. Or he misinterpreted her page.
That's right.
Into a way that helped this happen. Now,
accidentally.
Here's the other thing that's floating around, George, and that is that when in May, during the anniversary of the Fatima prophecy, when it was revealed many, many years back in 1917, you know, John Paul II was a Marian pontiff. He had the M of Mary in his coat of arms. He was very much into the cult of the Marian pontiffs. And he was very much attached to the whole vision of Fatima, especially after he had been shot. Because that happened in May earlier years before, and he believed that the Virgin Mary saved him from dying. Because he was out celebrating the Fatima prophecy when the assassination attempt was attempted years before. Well, there was a lot of pressure in the 1990s with the millennium coming up to release the third and final secret, which was much delayed for the public. And so suddenly in May, during the time of the celebrations, here comes Cardinal Bertone with not one, but three handwritten pages purported to be from Sister Lucia, which was in a monastery somewhere, an oath of silence. The first, when I started hearing him read it, he's saying people are probably going to be disappointed when they see this. First off, it doesn't have the opening line that people have known for 30 years it had. It's three pages handwritten rather than one. And it goes on to do something which I find very intriguing about Bertone because of his order, where he comes from. The prophecy that's written in it basically sounds like a variation of what St. Don Bosco in the 19th century wrote about the destruction of Rome, how the Pope and his surviving priests were refugees and had to leave the ruins and the darkened skies. And there's a lot of that element in it. And if people want to read it, you can go to hopeprophecy.com and click on the Fatima Gate link in this current blog.
And you'll be able. Where would they go, John? If the Vatican happened to have been annihilated in some catastrophe, where would they go?
Well, I mean, the church owns lots of properties all over the world, and so it's funny how it isn't actually talked about in these prophecies where they go, except that Don Bosco gave it 400 days of the emergency. But the thing that gets me about this is that Cardinal Bertone is a Salesian. He belongs to the order that St. Don Bosco established, and this order... the tone of the prophecy looked like it was lifted off of Don Bosco's vision, more than anything that I can tell that it resembles. And it just makes me think, he's the man who hands this prophecy, which is released, and it sounds a bit like one of the prophecies that he grew up with as a member of that society. What I also find intriguing is the old coat of arms, and it's up on hogprophecy.com. You can see the old coat of arms before. They have a new one now. It's very hip. But the old coat of arms for St. Don Bosco's organization, which was established in the 19th century to help children become good Catholics and have spiritual as well as be well taken care of and loved during the industrial age, because a lot of kids were working in sweatshops and stuff. And St. Don Bosco did a lot of really beautiful things for kids in the 19th century. He was you look at his picture, he's a very beautiful man. And the thing that gets me is that on that coat of arms, if you look at it, you'll notice there is a comet, rising comet on it. And I'm thinking, if Bertone is made the Pope, and this and all these things we've talked about in the last few hours about interesting correlations, if that indeed becomes true, it really will be something, because not only do we have a lot of connections to what Malachi expected, but we also have something outside of Malachi with the comet, which is, of course, this year is going to be remembered as the year of the great comet. It's certainly going to be remembered as the year of the great meteor that streaked across Russia. For the first time in history, a million people had an eyewitness view of a major meteor event that hasn't happened for over 100 years, since Tunguska in 1908.
It was an amazing thing. Now, though, with the Hopi prophecy that you mentioned earlier in the blue star, which may indeed be this comet, do you find, John, that prophecies are all kind of geared toward the same focal point, and that they're all coming together?
Well, eschatological prophecies that have an idea that a certain events have to happen around a certain time, are definitely full of a lot of anticipation, trying to seek out the signs that indicate the time is now. Now, no tradition other than Christianity is so dependent on these dates. I mean, there have been many, many Christian movements that have anticipated the end of days and the apocalypse and the coming of the thousand-year reign of Christ on earth and the peace, which is, by the way, the final part of that four parts of the prophecies of the Catholic apocalypse, is that there's an era of peace and this church is restored after its test. And the popes are restored. That's one way the official Vatican line looks at. But there, certainly we've had a lot of people anticipating 2012 and the Mayan calendar, even though in my book, Nostradamus 2012, The End of End Times, I clearly show that it's off by 13 years, and it happened in 98-99, this shift of the Mayan cycle of the 13th Bactrian era, 5,125 years. What is clearly happening, I could go on for hours about this, but I'll shorten it to just simply say that there are a lot of prophetic traditions that are seeing a lot of their signs that generally look at a world with a runaway climate, with the potential of rising oceans, with the potential of extreme weather, global famines, large-scale wars that happen from the breakdown of society, the insustainability of a society that can't feed itself, and commerce. I mean, it's like your economists were talking in the first hour about how things are going to get better in about 20 years. And that may very well be from something. I've often said that economics in the future I've said this for 25 years on these shows, that the real threat to the economy is not what the machinations of fiat economies and what people play around with their heads and get enough people to believe in it, and the belief system then makes the economy work. The thing that I've always said is going to take down the global economy is global warming, because we're not facing it. But I will also add, as a little bit of hope, is when global warming is viewed as an even greater threat than Adolf Hitler and the Axis forces, and they see it as a war against something we're doing that's stupid, that is the enemy. And then when the human race realizes their future, their civilization is at stake, rather than wait for Jesus to come out of a cloud or see these as the signs of the end times, I think the majority of the human race is going to see this as a collective threat to their future, and they will then act, and in the emergency of that act, create a new economy, just like we got out of the Depression the last time.
John, when we come back, I want to talk with you about Nostradamus and how his predictions may or may not fit into this prophecy. Well, we're going to take your phone calls next hour with John Hogue as we talk about the prophecy. And we'll come back and talk with him a little bit more about Nostradamus on Coast to Coast AM. John Hogue with it. John, did Nostradamus make any predictions about the last pope or the prophecy that could tie into it?
Oh, yes. He generally follows the caution of hiding the name of Peter by talking about the fishing bark of Peter, which is the Holy See, it's the ship of state, of the Vatican. He hides behind the symbols of the Vatican, but he very much, and I'll just go over a few of his four-line quatrains that were written, serialized in the 1550s and then all gathered together about 2 years after his death. And you see, he was, though born Jewish, his family before he was born became converts to Catholicism, mainly so that they wouldn't be thrown out of Provence when a very anti-Semite king of France took over the kingdom of Provence, which had not at that point been part of France. And so, like many Jews did during these times of troubles, they converted. So deep down, he was really following two traditions, the Jewish and the Catholic. But I think he found, as many Catholics do, who are called little C Catholics, found a way to describe the Greek word Catholicus to mean the universal, and that means embracing wherever the Spirit of God is alive. Whether it's in the world of the Gentiles or the world of the Jews, the Arabs, or anybody. So we have quatrain 4 from century 1 of Le Prophétier, the prophecies, which is his magnum opus, his history of the future. And he said, in the world there will be one monarch, and he's talking about the Pope here, whose life in peace will not be for long. Then the fishing bark, the bark of Peter, will be lost. It will be ruled to its greater detriment. So there's one indication of how he thinks about the final pope, and it's not too good.
No.
Then he says in quatrain 41, century 10, the great star, comet maybe, will blaze for 7 days. The cloud will cause two suns to appear. The great dog will howl all night. Now, this is his Dog and Dohan. This is his play on Gog and Magog from Ezekiel's prophecies of the apocalypse. So it's an apocalyptic phrase. It says, when the great pontiff will change lands. Now that clicks into the collective vision that the Pope will become a refugee because of the destruction of Rome. And this is often where Nostradamus takes these prophecies, which now bundled together look like they're all part of one prophecy scattered into four-line verses that were scattered throughout his nearly 1,000 predictions. He intended to write, and probably did write, 1,000 quatrain, four-line poems, but we have lost a number of them from his seventh volume, so now we have, I think, around 942 surviving. Next prophecy, quatrain 70 of century 2, talks about the dart from the sky will make its extension. That could be a missile. It could be a comet. That could be another portent, a meteor.
Could be, yeah.
Death in speaking, great execution. Now, that shows some kind of censorship and great execution. I think there's a lot of people who use Internet right now are very concerned that maybe this might even be an attempt to censor Internet. The stone in the tree, the proud people surrendered. Now, that's symbolic. The stone, la pierre en l'arbre, the stone in the tree, that's also Peter in the tree. So there's something, again, with Peter in it.
It's amazing how many times he uses that name.
And he says, clamor, human monster. But that's also in monstre, in Old French, means revelation, divine revelation. And then purge, expiation. So it sounds like this, the fall of an evil pope, if that's possible in this. There's other ways to interpret it.
Is he saying that the clock for end times is kicking in too?
Well, he has, unlike the Mayan calendar, even though, and I make a point in Nostradamus 2012, The End of End Times, which is downloadable at hogueprophecy.com, that his, he had no connection to the Mayan calendar. And there have been a number of people who have made a career in New Age circles and on even shows that I've appeared on History Channel that made a career trying to tie him to, through this lost book of Nostradamus, to the Mayan calendar. The problem is the only threadbare link is a fraudulent piece of work that was done by somebody else, not by Nostradamus, with the famous watercolors of papal visions, which a lot of those are actually predate Nostradamus. They're bad knockoffs predating Nostradamus by 300 years that have been regurgitated into that book. He does have no connection with the Mayan calendar, but it's interesting to note that he gets his 2012 as the year 1999, where that's his turn of the millennium. And a number of the things that he predicted and dated for that time, during the time of an eclipse that was going to happen in August of 1999, which was the first portent, which would then see a series of earthquakes, which did indeed happen a few days and a few weeks after that. We had the major quake in Turkey, where the shadow had gone over, and in Greece and Corinth. And there were other quakes as well that led to the major quake in Gujarat, India, about 18 months or so, 16, 18 months later, which is where the shadow of the eclipse left. Then there was another great eclipse in the summer of 2009 that started where that one finished. I sometimes wonder if these two eclipses in 10 years apart are actually considered one in his prophecy, because that also saw where the shadow touched certain lands, great earthquakes. It saw where the shadow left the earth, a tidal wave in Samoa, and of course part of it touched Japan, where we had the great Tohoku quake 9.0 with the great tsunamis. This is also the man who said there'd be a great earthquake reported at the bottom of Asia. And
there was.
There was, because the bottom of Asia is Indonesia. And that's where the great tsunami on Boxer Day, 2004, December, just the day after Christmas, where as many as 250,000, although unofficial reports put that more to 300,000, 400,000 yeah. people, were killed by the tidal waves, the tsunamis. So, according to his view, and according to the accurate view of looking, if you actually embrace what native peoples of America say about the Mayan calendar and other, the Hopi prophecy, the purification, and the blue kachina, there's no like timepiece saying, okay, it's 2 seconds to 12, now we're going to shift into the Aquarian Age just like that, and everything is going to change around. This is kind of McDonald's hamburger doomsday stuff,
but they're barometers of a timetable, aren't they?
Well, they're a season. The better way to look at it is that the great epics of history are change like seasons change. They don't change all of a sudden. When you watch, spring is starting to approach now in a lot of ways. You see the indications of it. And like where I live in the Pacific Northwest, the crocus are starting to bloom. Some of the seedless cherry trees are starting sure. to flower. But it's not going to go poof, everything's all flowered up. And then when winter comes, it all goes flunk, all the leaves fall off, and there's snow, 10 feet of snow on the ground or something. And the seasons of history are the same way. And the native people that I've contacted, including Thomas Banyaka before he died, about the Hopi prophecies and other things, are see things as more natural and slow. Certainly weather quickens during the time of a change of seasons, but it doesn't instantaneously happen. And so Nostradamus is also showing, I think, in his prophecies, a gradual ramping up of this change, which will probably take 50 to 100 years. To see the whole change in the shift of ages. And in this, he also talks about probably the most important thing for us to look out for, which we can prevent, that has Peter, the Pope, involved in it. And that is the two will not remain united for long. And within 13 years, they will give to the Arab or barbare power. They will succumb to it. There will be such a loss on both sides that one will bless the bark and the cape of the Pope. Well, the bark is a symbol of Peter. So it could mean Pope Peter, the final pope in the line of Malachi. This prophecy is one of the many prophecies talking about the great brothers of the north, who are called Aquion. And They are called that because of Aquila, which is the eagle constellation, where the northern winds used to come down into South France whenever it was up in the sky. So it's one of those classic Nostradamus classical metaphors for a couple of brothers who are in great kingdoms of the north that have eagles as their totems. Well, America has the bald eagle. And up to the end of the Soviet Union, when the Russian Federation was recreated, it restored its double-headed eagle as its symbol of state. So since the early 90s, we are now within the window of the great brothers of the North, who are not yet brothers, who can be, but they're undermined by a Barbare source. Now, Barbare is the term for Barbary Coast pirates, but it's also an anagram for Da'arab. From the Arabs. And that would be Nostradamus, who was very anti-Islamic, pointing to the Middle East as the source of troubles that would cause Russia and America to go to war with each other. And this fits into a whole collective warning of a caveat of many prophets, Catholic and non-Catholic, that have indicated, including with Nostradamus, that thermonuclear war is not something that died as a danger with the end of the Cold War. That it's something still waiting in our future that could come upon us very quickly, and as Stormberger, one of the great 17th century German seers, once said, and they will walk with their eyes wide open into these conflagrations of the final world war. He was the one who predicted three world wars. And he's somebody to note, because when he predicted World War I, he described it as there would be an iron horse on an iron road. That would be, he described the towns where this line would be created. And on the day that thing is built, there will be a world war times two years times two. And the very day, August 1st, 1914, the towns that he described on the eastern perimeter of Bavaria, he was from Bavaria, there was a line of railway that was finished and inaugurated with a ribbon, and they cut it and let the train go on the day World War I started. So this man is somebody to really be watching in the future. I will write more about him.
John, well, let me ask you this, too. Where is the talk of the Antichrist tied into anything about the last pope?
Well, the whole concept of the Antichrist is even though it's shared in other religions, it's really crystallized in the realm of Christian theology and prophecy, and some people would say, not the approved prophets, Catholic prophets, but other Catholic prophets would say that the Antichrist has infiltrated the very highest halls of the Vatican, and that the test of the Church will be a false pope. Now, since we're running out of popes in the hierarchy, in the sequence, then a lot of people who have that more radical view think that Benedict, his successor, are actually part of that. Now, there's other schools of thought that look like Nostradamus does at code naming not one, but three antichrists. And the first was called Napoleon King. And the second was Hister.
Hitler, possibly, right?
Possibly was the ancient name for the river Danube, where he grew up in Linz, Austria. It was called the Easter, with a silent H. The third is called Mabus, M-A-B-U-S. Now, Mabus decodes into a number of interesting names of people in the forefront of the struggle on both sides of the conflicts of the War on Terror, the so-called War on Terror, and the Middle Eastern situation. And this is important because you could definitely see where Russia is sympathetic to Syria and very sympathetic to Iran, that, and there's a lot of prophecies of Nostradamus about a future war with Iran that could actually be that Middle Eastern Barbary source that causes the United States and Russia to have a direct confrontation that in the next 13 years, you've got to know when to start the count, but when something happens that sets them on the course to this, there's a 13-year grace period where it can be stopped, but they go to war. And the winner is on the American side because they bless the bark of Peter of Rome, the Pope who's Peter, the bark of Peter. But in that process. It's a few more prophecies to talk about, which show, again, portents in the sky and destruction of Rome from Nostradamus. Quatrain 15 from century 2 says, a short while before the holy monarch, John Paul I is considered, is murdered. Castor and Pollux, that's the twin name pope, that's a sign of Nostradamus for John Paul II. In the papacy, a bearded star, again, is a sign of a comet, or a bearded star could be a metaphor for a missile. Public treasure by land and sea is emptied. There's a lot of prophecies that tie into these portents, meaning literally the Vatican's treasures are empty from the bank scandals, or that there's a great port in the sky, a comet that indicates the next Great Depression. And that's also why we should be watching this year of 2013 for these portents. We might, in the book 2013, which I'm finishing, I'm talking about from the Great Depression to the 30s, we may enter a period that looks like it's improvement, but actually it's a new bubble, and that it could end in a greater depression than the Great Depression. We can stop that, but that's up. Now, he also talked about not from Spain, but from ancient France, there'll be a future pope. That'll be St. Peter's trembling ship. He will make a promise to the enemy who will cause great plague during his reign. Now, that enemy may be the Antichrist. Now, there's some interesting things to look at with this because there's a very ancient name from the Canadian who is possibly Papabili, who may be a pope. So for the record, we've got to also look at Marc Ouellet, who is 68, from Canada. He's head of the Congregation of Bishops at the Vatican, and he is also Papabili, and he may very well be that ancient name, so we might have a French-Canadian as pope. So that's another one to watch out for. The final two prophecies really get into what Don Bosco and what many Catholic seers see is Nostradamus now talking directly about the destruction of Rome. It is very near the Tiber, the river that goes to Rome. Death threatens. Well, the Vatican is very near the Tiber. In fact, the Castel Sant'Angelo is over the Vatican on the bridge. Shortly after the Great Flood, rising oceans perhaps, the head of the church will be taken prisoner and cast out, the castle, Sant'Angelo, and the palace, the Vatican, in flames. And then there's also talk with the flood theme again in another prophecy. A torrent will to open the tomb of the marble and lead to the great Roman with the Medicene device. Now, Medicene is an anagram for Deus in Me, which was the motto of St. Peter. In the spring of the year, the tomb will be uncovered, and the ruins of the Vatican after the flood of the great Roman. That's what I interpreted that to mean, that it has something to do with that. And, of course, that ties in, once again, we'll read, finally, St. Malachi's prophecy, which is for the Petrus Romanus. He said, in the final persecution of the Holy Roman Church, Peter the Roman, Petrus Romanus, will occupy the sea, who will guide his flock through numerous tribulations and feed his flock. Those tribulations past the town of the city of the seven hills will be destroyed, and the terrible judge shall judge the people.
Hold on, John. We're going to come back. We're going to have another hour to go with you. We'll take phone calls and talk a little bit more about the prophecy, the Antichrist, and the last pope.